Hi there. You're listening to Philosophical Discursions, the podcast to accompany the blog Philosophical Disquisitions. In today's episode, I'll be taking a look at an article by the philosopher Neil Manson entitled Cosmic Fine-Tuning, Many Universe Theories and the Goodness of Life. Now, please visit the blog at philosophicaldisquisitions.blogspot.com for a link to the paper, along with many other interesting articles about philosophy of science, religion, ethics, and society. Manson's paper is a contribution to the debate about the argument from fine-tuning. Now, it may be an insult to your intelligence, but I'll still state the obvious and say that theories of physical cosmology mathematically model the universe using a range of precisely definable parameters. These parameters would include the age of the universe, the mass energy, the rate of entropy, the rate of expansion, and the mass ratios of particular particles, such as the electron, the neutron, the proton, and so on. Now, it is a long-standing observation in physical cosmology that if you take the values of those parameters, such as the mass ratio of the particles or the rate of expansion, and vary them ever so slightly, you will produce a radically different universe. In particular, you will produce a universe that does not give rise to life. This gives the impression to some that the universe is fine-tuned for life. And there is an assumption that this fine-tuning needs an explanation. Now, obviously, theists think that God is the explanation of the fine-tuning. They obviously have a vision in their heads of a God sitting back, looking at the various values that the parameters could have taken and picking the values that gave rise to conscious, rational beings like ourselves. This would fit in with their overall theistic worldview. Manson's paper looks at the assumption underlying this argument from fine-tuning, namely the assumption that fine-tuning needs an explanation. Now, he thinks it's pretty obvious why theists think it needs an explanation. They want something that will confirm their commitment to God. But Manson is more interested in why many physicists, some of whom are self-professed atheists, follow suit and think that fine-tuning needs an explanation. And he thinks that they do so because of an implicit and unexamined value judgment, namely the judgment that life is an intrinsic good. One physicist who seems to fit Manson's bill is Lee Smolin. Lee Smolin has said that the existence of stars is the key to the problem of why the cosmos is hospitable to life. And he goes on to say that any philosophy according to which the existence of stars and galaxies appears to be very unlikely or rests on an unexplained coincidence cannot be satisfactory. And many other cosmologists, according to Manson, share Smolin's sentiment. So they are all, for some reason, attracted to the idea that the fine-tuning needs an explanation. Now, as philosophers, to see whether their assumption is a good one, we need to step back and ask kind of a meta question. We need to ask what kind of things need an explanation. And to explore this question, Manson asks us to consider a story. It involves a securities regulator, let's say the SEC, and some stockbroker or investment bank, let's say Goldman Sachs. So some low-ranking official in the SEC of a Monday morning looks over the records from the various investment banks for the previous week and spots that Goldman Sachs made a very large profit. Let's say they made a $500 million profit. The low-ranking official, eager for a promotion, marches down to the Goldman Sachs office and demands an explanation for this $500 million profit. Now, as Manson points out, he can't just be demanding an explanation for the profit by itself. After all, investment banks like Goldman Sachs are in the business of making profits. It's a rather unsurprising thing that they should make some sort of profit in a week. No, the securities regulator must be troubled by some feature of this profit. For example, Goldman Sachs may have made a lot of money at other people's expense, or they made a lot of money on some company or investment that subsequently, after they had gotten out of the market, went sour. These additional features may make the regulator's original demand for an explanation reasonable, in a way that the bare demand for some sort of explanation for a profit by itself is not reasonable. Now, this story is making a point, and the point is that the mere fact that the parameters that make up the physical models of the universe take on some set of values is not enough by itself to demand an explanation. Now, there must be some further set of assumptions, some further set of disturbing features that makes the universe that we see merit explanatory attention. Are we happy with this line of reasoning so far? Well, maybe we aren't, because there is a principle with a noble philosophical heritage that demands an explanation for everything. I am, of course, alluding to the principle of sufficient reason, first enunciated by, well, maybe not first, but certainly most famously enunciated by Gottfried Wilhelm von Leibniz. The principle of sufficient reason claims that curiosity can never come to a rest with the standard scientific explanations, because everything must have a sufficient reason for its existence. If we are told that the gravitational constant has a particular value, we can always ask the further question, why does it have that value? And indeed, we could ask that question over and over again, no matter what value a scientist decided to postulate for us. Now, it's important to realize just how thoroughgoing the principle of sufficient reason is. I've given the example of the gravitational constant, but one shouldn't become wedded to that example, because this principle of sufficient reason is demanding an explanation for absolutely everything. And surprisingly enough, that is what makes it irrelevant to the present question. That is the question of why the fine-tuning of the universe needs an explanation. Because, as Manson points out, if we did appeal to the principle of sufficient reason, we would have to appeal to it no matter what the values of the fundamental constants were, even if the values didn't give rise to life. So cosmologists like Smolin, who seek to explain the fine-tuning, can't be doing so because of a hidden attraction to the principle of sufficient reason. There must be something else going on here. Now, what could this be? The next possibility surveyed by Manson is that these cosmologists are wedded to the idea of a tidy explanation. Now, if you're like me, you're probably wondering, what the heck is a tidy explanation? Imagine we were given the unenviable task of flipping 1,000 coins in a row. Let's say that once we've got through the drudgery of this task, it turns out that we've managed to flip 1,000 heads in a row. This would surely pique our curiosity. Now, our scientist and mathematician friends could come along and say, well, sure, 1,000 heads in a row is incredibly unlikely, but it's not impossible, and there are enough people flipping coins out there for at least one of them to get the 1,000 heads in a row sequence on at least one occasion. These scientists and mathematician friends are in effect appealing to luck or chance in explaining what we just observed. But let's say we have another friend who's less enamored with mathematics and statistics, and he says, well, hang on, 1,000 heads in a row, maybe the coin is biased in some sense. Maybe we've been given a trick coin, and this trickery explains why we got the 1,000 head sequence. Some philosophers, such as John Leslie or Peter Van Eenwagen, have said that the difference between the two explanations, trickery on the one hand and luck or chance on the other, is that trickery is a neater or tidier explanation than chance. And this gives us a kind of a formal definition of a tidy explanation. It is something that is better than the hypothesis of chance. This idea of the tidy explanation fits into the broader or larger Bayesian framework for understanding the confirmation of theories or scientific explanations. This Bayesian framework is often used in formulating fine-tuning arguments. So Bayes' theorem states that the probability of a hypothesis given an observation is equal to the probability of the observation given the hypothesis times the probability of the hypothesis divided by the probability of the observation. That might be a little confusing to follow in audio, but it's not too important for present purposes. Proponents of fine-tuning will say, and this is just one way of formulating it, that the probability of life given a creator who finally tunes the parameters of the universe is greater than the probability of life given no creator varying the value of the parameters. So the idea here would be that the design explanation is a tidier explanation than the chance explanation. Now, Manson's atheistic cosmologists obviously don't like this argument, so they come up with an alternative hypothesis, usually the multiverse hypothesis. And they would say that the probability of there being life is much greater on the multiverse hypothesis than on the chance hypothesis. The multiverse hypothesis is a tidier explanation than the chance hypothesis. Manson thinks that there's something curious in this appeal to the multiverse hypothesis. And the reason it's curious goes back to our earlier objection to the principle of sufficient reason. If you recall, Manson argued that cosmologists like Lee Smolin can't think that the fine-tuning needs an explanation because they're wedded to the principle of sufficient reason, because this principle of sufficient reason would apply no matter what kind of universe we happen to have. And likewise, the multiverse hypothesis can't be a tidy explanation of fine-tuning, because the multiverse hypothesis explains all universes, no matter what particular lottery of fundamental constants happens to exist in them. In other words, cosmologists can't be thinking that the universe is a put-up job because of their fondness for tidy explanations. So we are left then with one final possibility. These cosmologists must think that life is intrinsically valuable. Think about it. Smolin said that the existence of stars is what made the universe hospitable to life, and he said that any philosophy that didn't account for the existence of stars would be unsatisfactory. But why would it be unsatisfactory? Only on the assumption that life is in some sense intrinsically worthwhile, an intrinsic good. Now, some might say that the assumption that life is an intrinsic good is rather innocuous, a fairly paltry and commonplace assumption. But Manson is inclined to disagree. He says, and I quote directly now, "Cosmologists are committed to an absolutely startling position. They are saying that before we came on the scene, back before there were stars, back before there were even galaxies, right back to the Planck time, an ethical proposition that life is good was true." This is, in effect, a scientist or a cosmologist appealing to a meta-ethical position known as moral realism. Moral realism holds that moral goods, evils, rights, and wrongs are firmly embedded in the most general and abstract metaphysical structure of the universe, that they do not depend for their existence upon the attitudes or values of rational agents. And moral realism is certainly a venerable and somewhat plausible meta-ethical position, but it's not one that is immediately intuitive or compatible with the atheistic or naturalistic worldview. Now, there's nothing more really to Manson's argument or article. That's all he wanted to say. He just wanted to make the point that cosmologists, like Smolin, are relying upon a value judgment when they appeal to the multiverse hypothesis. And perhaps, if they were more bullish, they wouldn't worry about fine-tuning arguments. They wouldn't really care. They would say, the universe is just a brute fact, and we have to take it as it is. That, I think, is a rather sobering thought, and an appropriate place to end. Thank you.